Draymond, party's ready.
Good morning. I'm Sarah Robsky on behalf of Mr. Draymond, and I would like to reserve 2 minutes. Thank you. And this morning, I am asking this court to reverse and remand for vacation all 4 convictions of Mr. Draymond's. The misdemeanor convictions are for felony violation of a misdemeanor violation of a no-contact order on the grounds of double jeopardy and the merger doctrine. And in asking for this relief, we are asking this court to revisit its 2001 decision in Parmalee, which, with all due respect, suggests that the double jeopardy and merger analysis in that case should be revisited. Yes, I'm asking you to overturn it. It is substantially similar factually as the case that we have before us. As to the double jeopardy, this court found that the misdemeanors were not the same act or transaction for purposes of the felony, and therefore didn't get to the Blockberger analysis, that the same act or transaction was the threshold. Suggests that the Blockberger test, or the double jeopardy analysis, rather, is not so limited that it has to be completely contemporaneously in time as to the separate acts that are being considered.
Counsel, I'm not following you. Completely contemporaneously in time.
That they don't have to occur at the exact same time to merit a double jeopardy analysis. That you can have one offense be a continuing offense and another offense be a single occurrence and still get to the double jeopardy analysis.
Well, it's necessary that it be more than one occurrence for purposes of whichever one it is that requires repeated harassment.
The felony stalking, yes.
So I'm not sure where you're going with the analysis in Parmalee. I'm sorry, let me just allow you to continue.
Well, in Parmalee, this court found that because it involved, that the felony stalking required repeatedly, that it could not necessarily, or just simply was not the same act or transaction, because it required of necessity multiple incidents, whereas the stalking conviction, or the misdemeanor violation conviction, required only a single incident. And I'm saying that that is not the double jeopardy test. Yes, there would, but the misdemeanor violation would be a lesser included of the greater offense of the felony stalking. And when you have a lesser and a greater, convictions for both violate double jeopardy. So I'm citing to Brown versus...
Why don't you give me a definition then, as you see it, of what... is that Parmalee ignored?
In Parmalee, saying that the finding that it was not the same act or transaction and therefore you didn't get past, you know, didn't even get into the double jeopardy analysis, that was flawed, that the double jeopardy analysis does apply to this offense.
Could you give me some fact patterns, please, some case law, something other than just your statement?
Brown versus Ohio in 1977, where the defendant was, he took a car from one jurisdiction, drove it to another jurisdiction, was stopped 10 days later, convicted in the second jurisdiction for joyriding on the 10th day, served his sentence, and then they went back to try and convict him for felony auto theft, alleged to have occurred 10 days earlier on the first day that he took the car. And the Brown court said that the joyriding was a lesser included of auto theft. Convictions for both violated double jeopardy, even though the joyriding occurred at a later date and was a separate, technically because they were on separate dates, were, yes, because you have the end of, I would disagree. I think that the reasoning remains the same, that you, if you're dividing up an offense.
Temporal breaks in the conduct in this case and discrete events which are alleged to constitute the violation of a domestic violence order rather than a tirade that went on for several days?
Yes. However, in Brown, they said that the...
Take your argument then to the logical conclusion, I think it's susceptible of. Once I violate the domestic violence order, all of the rest of my conduct for the rest of my natural life is a continuation of that same misconduct? How do we segregate it?
I think once the state has chosen to prosecute a period of time for the felony stalking, that becomes, for lack of a better word, the unit of prosecution. And then if, after the defendant, if assuming he's convicted, serves his or her time, then continues that behavior after conviction, then it starts over again. That would have been the prosecutor's option.
That would be okay.
I believe it would. I mean, the stalking statute requires repeatedly two or more. You could limit it to two. They chose not to in this case. Because the misdemeanors are lesser included of the greater, yes. I think that's part of the problem with this stalking statute is there's all sorts of scenarios that can be seen and prosecuted and probably will come before this court that just it just is a mess.
Counsel, just to be sure I understand this, there are four misdemeanors charged here. If I understand what you said just a moment ago, two of those were required as lesser included to support the felony.
Yes.
So you're asking us to strike all four of them.
Yes, because the way it was charged, the statute says two or more. Two is the minimum. And that's my other complaint with Parmalee, is that this Parmalee court merged two out of his three convictions, and based on Parmalee, this court merged, well, they said the same criminal conduct, but we would suggest that they needed to merge two out of the four, which ignores the legislative language of two or more. And if the legislator, they clearly set a minimum, but not a maximum.
Back to your unit of prosecution argument, perhaps instead, that the reason perhaps they can't charge the two felony stalkings is the unit of prosecution is two or more during the charging period. So that gets you one felony stalking, but we only need two of the misdemeanors to establish the felony stalking, so we don't have any double jeopardy or merger issue with respect to any additional.
I would disagree. When they are charged as they were charged here to sentence him separately on the additional two, that is ignoring the clear statutory language of or more.
Good morning, Your Honors. Dennis McCurdy for the State of Washington, the respondent in this case. I do believe that Judge Agut, Applewick, and Baker got Parmalee correct in the year 2001. The Supreme Court denied review on that case, which I think is an indication that they thought it was decided correctly. And we have had 8 years for the legislature to tell us it was decided incorrectly. This is a question of legislative intent. The legislature has not acted on Parmalee in 8 years, which shows the legislature is acquiescing in the decision of this court in Parmalee. Before I go into what I had prepared to say, let me answer the court's question when defense brings up Brown v. Ohio in the joyriding and auto theft. And I would direct this court to United States v. Garrett 471 U.S. 773 because they discuss Brown v. Ohio and the limitation of Brown v. Ohio. In Brown v. Ohio, you do have a joyriding and an auto theft, and their auto theft statute is like our TMV. It includes both the theft of the vehicle but also the riding in the vehicle. And the Supreme Court said in that case the theft was essentially a single continuing course of conduct from the moment he took the vehicle until the moment he was ultimately stopped for the joyriding, and therefore the facts were identical to prove both crimes, and they said that is not permitted. That would, in fact, violate double jeopardy. But the court in Garrett distinguished that, and I think it's an important case in distinguishing that. In Garrett, the defendant was charged and pled guilty in Washington to a drug offense, serious drug offense. And then in Florida, he was charged with continuing a criminal enterprise. This is all in federal court, what they refer to as a CCE, which requires that you prove three or more violations of the U.S. Code for drug offenses. One of those violations was the Washington drug offense. And the U.S. Supreme Court said that does not violate double jeopardy. And they distinguished Brown v. Ohio, specifically, as Judge Leach was indicating, you have separation between each incident. It's not a continuing incident. Like stalking is not a continuing incident. The fact that the defendant commits two violations of no contact order, there's no way of knowing whether he's going to commit a third, a fourth, a fifth, or more. And that's the type of distinction that U.S. v. Garrett made. And I think that's an important distinction to make because it negates that argument. I also think it's important to look at the extent of the defense argument, what they're asking this court to do. First of all, there is no limitation that the prior act or crime be a violation of a no-contact order under their argument. Their argument simply is that we used the evidence of violation of no-contact order to prove the stalking charge, therefore double jeopardy applies. That would mean that any crime, whether it's an assault, a malmish, a harassment, rasberg, rape, unlawful imprisonment, any crime that is also proved in the course of proving stalking would in fact have to be vacated under the defense argument. Now again, the question is that what the legislature intended? And I think that's very unlikely. The second thing that the defense would that falls from the defense argument is it doesn't make any difference the number of acts and crimes committed. In this case, it was four. It would not matter if it were 100 acts of violation of no contact order. The defense would still be arguing that because we used that evidence to prove the stalking charge, they all must be vacated. Again, you have to ask, is that what the legislature intended, or did the legislature intend that the stalking charge be an additional charge to deal with serious violent domestic violence offenders who continue their conduct? Excuse me. I don't believe so. I believe that would, unless there's an intervening event, I believe, and I didn't look up case law on the unit of prosecution for stalking, but it seems to me that the unit of prosecution for stalking would continue unless you had some sort of intervening event. For example, if we prosecuted the person for stalking and he's imprisoned, he gets out and he continues his activity, you've got a new unit of prosecution. But off the top of my head, I think under the unit of prosecution analysis, you couldn't break up the stalking artificially just to increase the number of charges. It's the same thing as taking a theft where you've got multiple thefts and aggregating them. The law says we can't break those up to artificially create additional charges.
That's true. The only way someone gets punished differently for 100 violations rather than two is to be able to punish for each misdemeanor.
Exactly. Otherwise, all those crimes go unpunished.
But will you address my earlier question to Ms. Borowski? Why doesn't that give her at least an argument here about vacating two of the misdemeanors?
The state agrees. The state agrees Parmalee was decided correctly. Because in Parmalee, it's not a double jeopardy. It's part of double jeopardy. It's not the same evidence test. It's merger. The violation protection orders, two of them were needed to increase stalking from a misdemeanor to a felony. That's all that's necessary, no more. And that's what the court did. Now, I put a footnote in my briefing that the court actually characterized it. I think they used some other term, same criminal conduct. They actually should be vacated because they entered judgment
under the merger doctrine.
There were two convictions, but no punishment imposed for two of them.
Yes, and if it wasn't entered into the judgment and sentence, it actually would still be okay because you can have the conviction, but as soon as the judge entered judgments on the J&S, then it becomes a violation, and those have to be actually vacated, and they still remain on the judgment and sentence with, I believe, some sort of language about same criminal conduct or something. So it would need to be corrected. It doesn't require resentencing. just a correction of the J&S, but that is exactly the Parmalee case. Two of them were vacated because those are necessary to elevate misdemeanor stalking to felony stalking. The other aspect of the defense argument that is not raised is that under their argument, if you had, for example, a couple of acts of violation of protection order, or one act, or however many, and those acts are charged, and the person is convicted on those acts, that would actually bar a subsequent prosecution for stalking. Those element or those violations could not be used. And again, that's the U.S. v. Garrett talks about that very aspect of the double jeopardy clause is not meant or intended to act as a bar to future prosecutions when you have predicate offenses that might, in fact, be part of a continuing course of conduct, like the Garrett case was, like this case was. I also think it's important to note that the Supreme Court said when they were dealing with the continuing criminal enterprise charge and statute, they said the act does not say that a drug operator can be convicted of CCE and the predicate offense. And they said the absence of that statement is not surprising given the purpose of a continuing enterprise offense. Quote, such a statement would merely have stated the obvious. Congress was seeking to add a new enforcement tool, meaning that you could, in fact, prosecute for both offenses exactly like we did here. Unless the court's got any questions, I've got nothing else to add. I would ask this court to affirm. Well, to correct, yeah, that's true. Thank you.
First, the state's... Sure, where were we? I would suggest that that's how they've worded the statute. I don't know if they intended that, but when they say two or more, they clearly set the minimum, but they did not set the maximum. I'd suggest I don't think the statute reads that the repeatedly starts out at the beginning of the statute, and I think it's the very last line, it's defined as two or more, and it's about defining the offense itself, this two or more incidents of harassment or following, that it is not, it's part and parcel of the offense itself. And they did not set a maximum. And I think by reading it that way, the court would be ignoring, as they did in sentencing at this case, the or more part of that statute. If they intended only two, they could have simply said two. I'd like to just address briefly Garrett that the state relies upon. In that opinion, the court specifically said that the continuing criminal enterprise statute specifically authorized separate punishments for predicate and the continuing criminal enterprise. And that's a situation that we do not have here, and that's a significant difference. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.